Welcome to the Access Astrology Podcast. I'm Arwen O'Neill, and I'm here with my good friend Allison Price, and we are coming to you from Vancouver, Canada. Today we are going to be talking about the astrology from May 18th through 30th, and we are going to be discussing Gemini.
Yes, the twins.
The twins, exactly. Gemini is ruled by Mercury. It is the masculine air sign. It is mutable. It is effervescent. I don't know. It's a great sign. So we'll be talking about that a little bit later.
Sounds good.
Yeah. But before we get into that, we want to thank our guest from last time, last podcast, Joan Morton. And yes. We had a wonderful conversation. It was just delightful. And
we were thrilled to have her, weren't we?
Thrilled to have her. And we want to thank Joan and say hi, Joan, if you're listening. Yes. And everyone, you guys can listen to that in our archives. It's up on our site, accessastrology.com. So. And now we'll talk about the transits.
The transits, okay.
The first thing we have is on May 22nd, we have a grand water trine between Jupiter, Saturn, and Chiron. And that's exciting because it's three planets in one.
In one great big triangle.
Yes, just, you know, for the price of one. And in a great big triangle, exactly. What more could you ask for? So long-term negotiations, plans, and treaties might be amended or agreed upon, and they may heal wrongs of the past. That's my interpretation of that.
Okay.
It's a good thing. And then on the 24th, we'll have an exact trine of Jupiter again and Saturn, just the two of those in
trine.
That's
just going to be reinforcing the grand trine that's existing. It's probably the whole week, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. And then on May 28th, we've got the Sun square Neptune. So that is an aspect that I am slightly familiar with, having that myself.
Do you? Natally?
Yeah.
Okay, we can talk about that a little bit more.
Yeah. So what I'm saying for this one is clouded judgment, not that I have that. Lacking initiative, not that I have that. A tendency to go with the flow, to daydream, and to delay, possibly. These things may be in the air.
So you have Sun square Neptune in your natal chart.
I do, yeah. And Mercury, but not as wide.
But this is the transit we're talking about.
Yeah, so everyone will have it. Yeah. And on the same day, we've got Mercury moving into Cancer. So for that, my keywords are, caring, compassionate, moody, emotional, nostalgic, and it'll be sort of a focus on nonverbal communications, a little bit more so than in Gemini.
Okay. In Gemini. Okay.
Yeah. And let's see, on the 28th also, we're going to have Venus going into Taurus. So Venus in Taurus is...
Now that's good.
Yes, exactly.
We like that.
Sensual, considerate, affectionate, a sort of an unhurried, leisurely sort of feeling, and maybe focusing a little more on the physically expressive rather than mentally expressive sort of forms of affection.
And Venus fits well there because Venus rules Taurus, so it's like it's coming home, right?
It is coming home, yeah. Venus rules Taurus and Libra, so this is in, you know, in terms of Taurus compared with Libra, it's you know, they're two very different, but both very feminine and very, you know, sort of, well, not feminine in the sense of, you know, but yeah, they're both Venusian, but in very different ways. So you've got Taurus being the sort of more earthy sort of, you know, like the Empress in the Tarot deck, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like the motherly kind of, you know, I don't know. And then Libra being more sort of the kind of cool and you know...
Airy,
yeah.
All right.
Yeah. So the next and last transit that we have in this period is May 30th. We're going to have the Sun trine Mars.
Nice.
Yeah, that's a good one. It's thought and action in harmony, achieving goals, swift decisions, but the downside is a possible recklessness or restlessness or carelessness, but it's not a hard trend, you know, hard aspect, so it'll be the good side of that.
It's slightly action-packed, isn't it?
Action-packed, exactly. Yeah.
We'd like to think.
Let's think that. And what is the moon up to?
Yes, the moon. So during our podcast period now from May 18th to 30th, the moon, on May 21st, the moon is going to be at the last quarter. Mm-hmm. And it's actually, it's a glorious last quarter, I saw it last night. It's a great moon. And then when then on we have the new moon on...
On the 28th.
On the 28th, which is the new moon in Gemini at 7 degrees.
Hmm.
So, again, we like our new moons. This is the time to do our...
New moon wishing.
And you would, what you would do then is at the new moon, you would wish for maybe two or three things that are in line with the house in your chart where the new moon occurs.
Right.
And so for you, Arwen, 7 degrees Gemini falls in which house?
That's the 8th house for me.
Is it?
It is.
So three types of things that you could wish for.
Would be things that I wouldn't want to talk about, probably. Because it's the 8th house.
Good one. So we won't mention your...
No, none of that. None of the other stuff.
We're not going to mention things that go bump in the night.
No, we'll not be talking about that at all.
And we're not even going to mention that you're rewriting your will.
Right. Yeah, we will have that. Oh, goodness.
No. So what we're looking for is when you're looking for that, you're looking for three things that's going to occur maybe in whatever house you're in.
Yeah.
In relation to the house that you can wish for to occur during the next month.
Yep.
Now, when it's in the 8th house, it's going to be private issues. You're going to have your private little secrets that you want to try and work on. Or it'll be deep transformative things that are occurring in your, maybe in your psyche, and so on. Yep. So clearly you don't want to discuss that at all.
And for anyone that doesn't know what we're talking about, the 8th house is the house of sex, death, and taxes.
Yes.
That's what they say. So
the inevitables of life.
The unspeakable, unavoidable.
Everybody faces these things.
Everybody faces
apparently.
These things. Yeah.
But death is the last one, I understand.
Yes.
That's anyway, yeah, so for myself, the new moon will be my 11th house.
Excellent.
So
that's a good house?
It is. It's a good house to step up my social life, which would be, any improvement would be great. Reach out to friends, reach back in touch with friends. And I'm talking to you over there who I haven't emailed for a while. And getting back in touch with that kind of thing, I think. Reaching out, being more social as opposed to being more introverted, which is can be a thing as well.
Yeah, certainly is for me.
So, yeah. So
I get Facebook notifications in my email and I panic. Oh, no.
Facebook,
what do they want
yes,
now?
What am I going to do? Refresh? What am I gonna, Facebook is getting out of hand. That needs to be, I need to have a call more than anything and sort it out because, it, as you say, the notifications alone are exhausting. But I
only get one every few weeks and it just causes me to panic. That must sound absurd to anybody that's listening.
I need to do something about those things. You're quite right.
Yeah.
And sort those social things out, social friends, and that would definitely be Facebook. Funny thing is, I must tell you, this week I actually... I've had a Google Plus account for quite a while, just sitting there doing nothing because I didn't know how to work it. And this week I've actually been trying to... breathe some life into this thing and try and understand what's going on. And maybe I'm getting off track, but we're talking 11th house here, and it's I'm kind of gaining a bit of traction because, and the only reason I'm bowing to it is because Google is so large, it does impact on PageRank and things like that. So I'm going down that
great
road.
Great and powerful Google, yes.
I'm making the big G.
Yeah.
So I'm making an effort to grasp what's going on with that social media, but it's not easy. You come from a base where I've been doing Facebook for 3 years, and now to face this, it's entirely different structure.
Not double plus good.
I don't know if you, well, I don't know what I'm doing at the moment, and they've got huddles or something, and I don't know.
Geez. Wow.
Do you don't use it, I take it?
No.
No. So I don't know what I'm doing there, but maybe with the new moon coming through on the May the 30th, I can... get that sorted out somehow, or speak to somebody, or get help, because I really need to get it working.
Yeah.
I just want it ticking over. It's not going to take over my life.
No, exactly. Well, anyone that wants to pitch in can email us, accessastrology@gmail.com,
yes.
And offer some Google help. Google help us.
That's right. So anyway, that's just kind of, by the way, that just occurred to me now as we were talking about it, that's come to my attention this week.
I wish that for you too. I'm going to forego my 8th house wish for yours.
So maybe I can do something in that kind of vein. And you want to write your wishes before the full moon, but you actually put the affirmation out.
Now, here's a question. Do we have to write them, like, physically?
Yes.
Oh, I've been doing it wrong.
Oh, well, I think the idea is that you write... I usually go with three things, because really, what more do you want?
Yeah.
You go with three things, and you're slightly specific. And what I usually do is I light a candle, we're getting all new agey here,
My goodness.
Just before the new moon. And you need to know when the new moon's going to occur during the day.
Oh.
And then you would have your wishes written before the new moon. You light your candle at the new moon and take it and you wish it through. I would read them out after the new moon is actually perfected.
I see. There's probably an app for that, huh?
Well, if there isn't, there's a need for it.
There is a need. Yes. App designers that may be listening.
Yeah, so if you even if you can't get it, well, you don't know when the new moon is, you're going to notice the next day, but you can get your new moon wishing down in line with your house.
All right.
Because it's good. The new moon will be in Gemini for everybody.
Yeah, yeah.
So exactly. That's why we take the house.
Exactly.
So that's what I've got to say about the moon today.
Exactly. Mm. Huh. What degree was that? Seven?
The 7 degrees of Gemini.
Oh, it's in my mother's first house. How lovely.
So there you go. Yeah. So there's an opportunity for her to get a face,
something.
Get a hair.
I think she might be.
New lipstick.
Mm-hmm. A new job. I don't want to be telling secrets, but I'm so proud of her.
Okay.
Yeah. Anyway.
Maybe she can write into us.
Mm-hmm. Again.
Yes.
Hi, Mother. All right. Let's see. Well, this is a opportune moment to segue into our overall Gemini thing.
So Gemini.
I've got thoughts on Gemini.
You got what on it?
Thoughts. Sauce. I thought I have thoughts.
You mean sauce?
Not a sauce.
You got sauce.
I got thoughts. I got thoughts in my head.
Oh, thoughts.
Thoughts. Thoughts. So it is the sign. It's the sign of communication, you know.
I thought you said sauce.
No, that'd be much more Taurus, wouldn't it?
Is this hip street speak? I'm not.
Oh, yes. That's what the kids are saying.
Anyway, I must tell you about Gemini, how it's pronounced.
Please.
Because everybody calls it Gemini. I know that. But when my very first astrology teacher, a million years ago, he insisted we called it Gemini.
No, he didn't.
He did.
Oh my goodness.
And his theory was that it's like margarine, which is apparently supposed to be pronounced margarine.
Holy crap.
So we had to spend like 2 or 3 years or whatever it was saying Gemini.
That's horrible.
And I don't know if it was just one of those crazy things that teachers impose on their students, but it was a way, I suppose, maybe of making it interesting and so on.
Sure.
But,
have you ever heard anyone else pronounce it?
Yeah,
that
you do get it. You do get them calling it Gemini. And of course it means twins, right?
Oh, yeah. You said that, like you were going to
tie
it into something.
I don't know where I was going with that because I know it's the twins in the sky, isn't it?
Castor and Pollux.
Castor and Pollux.
Is there something else that is from that root word where we could, you know, tiebreaker kind of the right way to pronounce it? Because, I mean, I'm sure it's got a
I'm sure
root
it's Gemini
word.
Because, I mean, even gems are gems, aren't they?
Yeah,
little,
they are.
But maybe that was a little gem.
Yeah, it was. That's true.
About pronunciation and astrology words that you can twist as much as you like.
Indeed.
But again, it's all about words, so there you go.
Yeah, it is. Exactly. Exactly. So many Geminis in my, you know. Okay, so exactly. My grandfather was a Gemini.
Okay.
Fantastic person. Just the most popular, most lovable, like outgoing. He was a real estate agent for, for a couple of decades. Just chatty. Every time we went to a restaurant.
Neighborhood, it's everything.
Oh my God. And the waitresses just loved him. They would sit there with their hand on his shoulder and they'd be chatting away.
It's
they wouldn't even want to go
for Gemini real
put in the order.
Agent, yeah.
Perfect. And before that, he was a paratrooper in World War II.
Wow.
Just a fantastic, you know, just all around awesome. And he met his wife, my grandmother, in a hospital when they were both in the war. She was a nurse and he was in the hospital with some awful, you know, tuberculosis or, you know, I don't even know, something that you catch when you're at war. Not an injury, but some sort of illness. And so they had, you know, piled people wherever they could fit them. And she met him because she was in the maternity ward. And then so he, you know, they had shuffled a bunch of soldiers into the maternity ward and they met and blah, blah, blah. Anyways, and she was a Capricorn. So, I mean, what kind of a combination is that? Gemini and Capricorn.
Yeah.
Wow. But they ended up having 6 kids and living together forever. And, you know, just very happy, wonderful story. But Gemini. So he's like just the quintessential for me, you know, Gemini male, kind of, you know, just this sort of patriarch of the family. Yes. And everyone just loved him, and, you know,
informed, knowledgeable, read the newspapers.
Yeah. Oh. And wrote little, he was constantly writing poems, and he was constantly like writing, he was always making jokes and always making puns, terrible puns that everyone was like, oh, you know, he had all these little books of always doing crossword puzzles all the way.
Mental jokes. Because Gemini's ruled by Mercury. Mercury, right? And Mercury's exactly. about communication, it's writing, like
words,
reading.
Playing with words.
Yes,
putting
indeed.
Them in different
puzzles.
Configurations. Always doing that. And I probably learned all kinds of crazy little verbal things from him.
So he had his son in Gemini, just to be clear. Yeah.
Yeah.
So even if you have your son or other planets in Gemini, you will have some Gemini in your chart. Do you have planets in Gemini?
Oddly enough, I don't. I don't even have any angles or anything in Gemini.
No, I actually don't either.
Considering how many Geminis I've known and been friends with, that is a little strange.
Well, that's probably filling a gap. Right?
Totally.
But it's interesting. If you don't actually have features in the sign, it's not always easy to understand the sign. So.
But of course, Virgo also is ruled by Mercury, so that, you know, that connection's definitely there. And I think they make me feel, you know, like a little bit more lighthearted, because Virgo is kind of the, you know, the more tedious side of Mercury, if I may be so bold as to take that on. And Gemini is kind of the more, just, you know, the more lighthearted side. They, you know, they're all about the words and stuff too, but they don't get all bogged down in the grammar and the pedantic, you know, everything has to be perfect.
It's it's the sign language, the handwriting, the gesticulation.
Just expression. Yeah, exactly.
I don't know.
With their hands. Yeah, I mean, I've had this one friend of mine, this one Gemini friend of ours, she'll come over and she'll like fill us in on what's been going on for the last like 3 months in popular culture, reality TV, fashion.
Oh, get you up to date.
Yes. And then, you know, she's gone in a flash and we're all informed again on we know again why we don't have cable TV after an evening with her. But it's wonderful. It's you know, you find out all these things and she just loves imparting all these little things that she's stored up to tell us, you know. They love disseminating little bits of information. Ask her any details about any of those little things, and she's like, bah, you know, I don't know. But it's just the little headlines that she keeps, you know, and likes to pass on. It's just really great.
Interesting.
Yeah. I've got another little bit of advice if you are not so, you know, if fashion is not your real thing, but you need to buy clothes for something, like if you have a new job, for example, take a Gemini shopping with you.
Oh.
It's a really good idea. Don't keep them in any one store too long, though, because they will start to sort of
Well, they're good at personal shopping for you, you mean?
Well, they're really good at just being like, you know, oh, no, not that. Or, you know, they're not going to be brutally honest. A Sagittarian, for example, and, you know, and they like shopping. They like, you know, being outside, and they like doing stuff and going into different places and seeing new things. And they like helping somebody else. They like being helpful. But they like it in a way that's not a huge, you know, investment of time or whatever. It's not like getting a Virgo or, you know, something or a Scorpio to help you with something where they're going to take over your life for the day or take it away and do it themselves and make you feel guilty about it later. Like they're the perfect afternoon, you know, assistant for
And would you even
something.
Think that perhaps then whilst the sun moves through Gemini during the course of the year, that would be a good time to...
Gosh, well, it is spring here in the Northern Hemisphere, which for a lot of people is, you know, spring cleaning, getting... Spring clothes, exactly. Getting their, you know, haircut.
Wardrobes.
Yeah.
Books to read, maybe.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Getting their toenails, you know, painted for the first time.
Horrors.
Yeah, stuff like that. So I think so, definitely. Get kind of a... Yeah, it's a nice fresh breeze kind of into the life of the year, I think. Definitely.
Excellent.
Yeah. And so we've got some famous Geminis to talk about.
All right.
Yes. So just to give everyone a sort of a flavor of what is a Gemini, we've got sun and moon in Gemini people, and then we've got sun and ascendant people.
All right.
Which is the way I like to sort of do it. So people with the sun and moon in Gemini.
So double Geminis.
Double Geminis.
Double is funny, isn't it? Is it a pair of twins or four?
Right, exactly. It's like quadruplets. Yeah. Using fertility drugs or something. Okay, so Salman Rushdie.
Okay.
Which is interesting because you look at him and he's very dark and sort of, you know, stormy and, you know, fatwa and all these things. And, you know, you don't really think. But then you see him on a talk show and he's got this lighthearted little laugh and he can just, riff on a story and just tell you about some crazy thing that happened to him, and
anecdotes
and just charming as hell, you know, just like a delightful person. And I've seen pictures of him in magazines where he's like at some party in New York and it's like a warehouse and he's got like, you know, three like 25-year-old women around him and they're just like, you know, drinking in his knowledge, and he's just standing there, you know, with a drink in his hand, and it's just, that's so Gemini, you know. So yeah, I don't know what his rising is, so he might have Scorpio rising or Capricorn or something like that to explain the, you know, the stormy sort of look, but definitely very, very Gemini. Who else? Heidi Klum, Jewel, the singer, Tom Jones, and Dave Navarro, the sort of rather unbelievably attractive gentleman who was in Jane's Addiction and whatnot. He's done some reality show, I guess, but very, very attractive. I think he plays an instrument.
I think what I've heard about Geminis as well is, or experience perhaps, is that even though they might be good at chatting, communication, conversation, and what I call cocktail party conversation, there's a lot of talking, but you don't often hear a lot about them. So, a lot of information and knowledge may be passed around and this kind of thing, but...
That is true. And this is another side of Gemini that we may or may not get into in detail. They do tend to have, you know, a higher than normal percentage of just sort of oddities about them, you know.
Quirkiness.
Uh-huh. Not in a, you know, Aquarian sort of mad genius kind of way, but just in maybe sort of a little bit off kind of way. No offense to any Geminis out there, but I've known a few more Geminis that are a little bit off than any other sign, I have to say. A thing, which, you know, I mean, it's got to be sort of a, you know, it's not probably as bad though as it would be for a sign that takes life more seriously.
Yes,
you know
what I mean? Yes.
Just to have have everything not quite line up is probably a little bit less upsetting to a Gemini.
That's right,
Probably. That's all I'm going to say about that. And then we've got the Sun and Ascendant people.
Yes.
So Queen Victoria actually had all three in Gemini, which is interesting. I don't know that much about her, but...
She had, what, 9 kids? Lived a long time.
My goodness.
And she, after her husband died, she just, that was it, you know.
Yeah.
She never looked at another man.
Wow. Aw.
Anyone who's got 9 kids, then I take off my hat.
Jeez, I know. I'm taking off my hat. Totally. Wow. Yeah. Your queens out there are very, very formidable women. Just like Elizabeth and her. Like, wow. Couldn't be more opposite, though.
No.
Although, interestingly, I mean, Elizabeth
She's
was
Taurus,
a,
right?
Well, yeah. I mean, this one. Yeah, I was thinking of the other one. The first, Elizabeth I. It's a Virgo.
Oh, I see.
Virgin
I see.
Queen.
And I was just thinking, we have Victoria Day. We've got Victoria Day in our
Is weird.
But that's her official birthday, whereas her actual birthday is the Gemini one, but the official is...
Was it last Monday?
It was this Monday.
Yeah, so it might have... Was it...
It was Monday.
Well, yeah, it's always going to be a Monday, so whatever...
Is it?
Yeah. Yeah.
I didn't know that.
I think.
Okay.
I don't know. I would assume it's always Monday.
Now, that, let me tell you, that is a Canadian thing, that if there's a date, we just make it a Monday, because...
Yeah.
But if it was her birthday, and she...
Yeah, but we don't give a shit about the hat.
Why can't we have the public holiday on the Tuesday?
Yeah, because we can't.
Because people
like to drive places, that's why.
Well, that's a Canadian thing, so
it
you
is,
just make
totally.
It fit.
Yeah.
So the calendar makers make it fit. But anyway, we celebrate Victoria Day. It's the beginning of summer, basically, isn't it? People go to the cottages, let some air in or something.
Exactly.
I understand.
Yeah, I know.
Who knows?
People here go to Victoria, the
yeah,
you know, in BC they do.
I was there yesterday.
I know you. That's hilarious. How was that?
Lovely, glorious day. And every time I go there, I say I'm going to this Bouchard Gardens. The absolute fabulous gardens there. Mm. But I need to leave my gang behind and go by myself because they're not interested. But anyway, if you are one day, that'll definitely be a trip for us. If you're interested, in that sort
cool. of thing. I've never been to Victoria.
Okay.
I know.
There's a fantastic astrologer there, and he does the Victoria Landscape Zodiac.
Excellent.
His name's Donald Allen, and
we will link to him.
Absolutely. He's that's another story. We'll talk about that another
awesome.
Day.
Mm. Very good. Queen Victoria, Sun, Moon, and Rising, all in Gemini. Who else? Morgan Freeman.
Okay.
I know. And what a, geez, you know, great.
Flexible act.
Totally. And the voice and the charm and, I mean...
The March of the Penguins, right?
Is anyone more charming than Martin Freeman? I don't think so. Yeah.
He did the March of the Penguins.
Oh, yeah. Yes, totally March of the Penguins. Exactly.
I'm thinking of...
Yeah. And now it's going to be in my head, that whole thing, that voice. Yeah, all penguins. Okay. And then
and
on
he
the sort
narrated
of,
it.
Yeah, yeah, totally. It's his. He's the voice of the penguins. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Big time. The voice of the penguins. Okay, so who else? Who could be more opposite from Morgan Freeman in life? Henry Kissinger is pretty much the anti-Freeman, the anti-Morgan Freeman. So
the great negotiator.
Something, yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Yeah, Nobel Peace Prize winning Henry Kissinger. So there's that. You know, people liked him, I guess, in that women supposedly found him irresistible.
Did they?
But apparently he was charming. This is which can only be explained by Gemini, really. It's just nothing else that yeah. Okay, so who else? Edward Snowden. Edward Snowden.
Oh, no. Tell us who he is.
Information wants to be free. He is the man who was a contractor with, I forget the name of the company now, but it was for the NSA. And he is the one that released
the whistleblower.
All of these. Yeah, the whistleblower. And what could be more of a Gemini word than whistleblower?
Yes.
Information wants to be free, you know? And yeah, bringing all this knowledge. And then, yeah, totally. Information. So what else? Dante. Dante as in okay. Dante's Inferno.
Mm-hmm.
Ruth Westheimer. Dr. Ruth.
Ruth. Oh, yeah. Oh.
I know. And Xaviera Hollander, who was...
Uh-huh. The happy...
Yeah. Which is an interesting thing because if you think about those last few, like taboo information, you know, like forbidden knowledge,
mm-hmm.
deep, dark secrets, classified information, information that nobody else, like, wants to either acknowledge or be let out. And, I mean, even Salman Rushdie, you know, making that public, bringing
yes.
it out into
yes.
the open, bringing
yes.
it to light, opening the, throwing open the doors, mm-hmm. like mm-hmm. spring cleaning, mm-hmm. you know, and just saying, hey, this needs to be known by everyone, you know, and let the chips fall where they may, which is
interesting.
Very,
interesting.
Very Gemini. Yeah. And so we've got a couple of in-depth profiles as well.
Right. Lovely.
And the first one is so in keeping with that theme, that bringing the dark whatever to light. Margaret Bourke White was an American documentary photographer. She is, she was born June 14th, 1904 in New York at 2 a.m. if anyone is following along.
We'll put the chart on the side,
we
yes.
will totally, yeah. And she is. She was known best for being a foreign photographer correspondent in the Soviet Union. She was the first foreign photographer allowed into the Soviet
uh-huh.
Union. She was also the first female correspondent in World War II allowed at all. She was the. It was her photo that was on the very first cover of Life magazine. So that when it launched in the 1930s, she was the first female photographer and also the first the first photographer, really, to go in with a camera to the steel mills and to photograph the production of steel in the 30s. Mm. So she went into all these mills in these steel, you know, factories and foundries and whatnot in, I think it was Cleveland? Somewhere. And you know, I think it was Cleveland, actually.
Okay.
Yeah, but it could have been Philadelphia, cause, you know, steel. But, and filming all of these, you know, just amazing, you know, pictures of, and this stark, beautiful black and white, and just, you know, liquid steel and the sparks flying everywhere. And if you go to our website, we'd link to a gallery of her photos. You have seen them, like I guarantee you. Whoever's listening, you have seen her photos.
Fantastic.
She's got, there's a picture of her perched on one of the eagles on the Chrysler building in New York. And her assistant actually snapped that while she was taking a photo of the city from that vantage point. And I mean, you know, just... beautiful, fearless. She was actually played by Farrah Fawcett in the movie. And Farrah, you know, did the dark hair and kind of, you know, made herself look serious. But and she was also, she was on, I guess they would say embedded these days, with George Patton, General Patton,
okay.
when they liberated Buchenwald concentration camps. So she was the one, if you've seen photos of the concentration camps, they're most likely her photos. You know, so she was the one that brought all that to light. She was also the last photographer to photograph Gandhi in just a few days before he was assassinated. So there's a famous picture of him with a spinning wheel, and he's sitting on the floor and he's in his robes, and she took that photo. So it's probably the most famous picture of Gandhi that exists, and it was all her. And she was the first, you know, female photographer on the Life magazine masthead, but she basically stayed on there for, I think, like 30 years. She worked basically up until she was too sick from Parkinson's disease to continue working.
Okay.
But she remained on their masthead at Life magazine up until, I think, 1969.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then she died in 1969. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, 71.
Journalism is such a Gemini thing. It really
is. Totally. Mm. Exactly. And that's the thing, too. I mean, you know, photography, but photojournalism, like, it's the immediacy, you know, it's that moment, you know, which is very much a Gemini thing as well. It's capturing that second of life.
Okay.
And Life magazine.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's all awesome. And in her chart, all of that stuff is in the second house. So, you know, worldly success and
yes,
you know,
she earned her money.
Yeah. And she was very successful. She did actually, I think, she was married once or twice, but did not have any children, and was not married when she died. So that's a little bit sad, but it's not something we would talk about if it was a man. So
no.
I should just keep my mouth shut about that. But it's, you know, it's interesting, too, because reading about her, you just, you know, you get the sense of just like, wow, you know?
Pioneer, like, even.
Yeah, and someone who's so famous, whose name, you know, I mean, I've probably heard her name before, but I never associated her with any of the photos that you know, all of these amazing, iconic pictures that are so just part of the subconscious of, you know, of life, kind of. Yeah. And on that topic, the next person that we have is, I'm not even going to bother to try to pronounce his first name because it's Dutch and it's confusing, but M.C. Escher, the artist,
yeah.
And he was born in 1898, June 17th, 1898, in the Netherlands. He's got the Sun, the Moon, Mercury, Neptune, and Pluto, all in Gemini.
Wow.
And he was, he's best known for his woodcuts and lithographs of impossible scenery, impossible patterns, birds that morph into fish, and
okay.
You know, staircases that go up and down, and you know,
mm-hmm,
kind of wrap around, and hands drawing each other, just all these great patterns. And that's another very Gemini thing, is patterns.
Yes,
and
absolutely,
you know, illusions of like you know, of the mental sort of kind of, you know, illusions, not sort of deceptive, you know, whatever delusion kind of illusions, but mathematical, you know,
they're
good
with code breaking as well.
Totally.
Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. Yeah, so I mean, he was actually an honorary mathematician. In he studied math, but then he went on to maths, as you say. but yeah, he brought mathematical principles to art, and weird mathematical principles like mind sort of bending, you know, like Inception, you know, sort of concepts of two-dimensional planes morphing into three-dimensional planes, and spheres and cubes and spirals, and just weird sort of conceptual, you know, math. Yeah.
Excellent research, Arwen. I must say that all of these charts and profiles, Arwen does a great job in researching all these things out and getting the information for
Thank
us on
you.
The site. Let's not let that slip past.
Aww. Thanks.
That's great. Yeah.
Yeah. So that is Gemini.
So they're versatile, they're generally, you know.
Mm-hmm. So bright and...
Yes, interesting to talk to.
Yeah.
Readers, writers. Mm.
Definitely.
Traders.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah. Well, let's do some book reviews.
Yes.
Yes.
So what did you bring this time?
Well, I have Political Astrology by Michael O'Reilly.
Okay.
Which is... Basically, it's a collection of essays, and it starts out with what I think is probably one of the most convincing of the U.S. horoscopes of, you know, of which there are many. We've got the Sibley chart, which is Sagittarius on the ascendant, and then we've got the one with Gemini on the ascendant, which is sort of
flipped.
Yeah, it's basically all the same angles and whatnot. And he is an advocate for the Scorpio rising U.S. horoscope, which, not just because I have Scorpio rising, but for very, very, you know, profound historical, you know, tie-ins that he goes into very great detail about, I am completely convinced by it. Although I do, you know, I obviously respect a lot of the astrologers that swear by the Sibley chart as well.
Sorry, you said Sibley's got Sagittarius rising.
Yeah.
So he's reckoning that it was signed earlier.
Yeah, at 2:20 in the afternoon.
Okay.
Which makes perfect sense, actually, because there are a couple of things that there's some writings from, you know, at the time where people, you know, I think, I can't remember the name of the guy, but basically someone wrote in their journal, we signed the paper around, you know, 2 in the afternoon, or mid-afternoon, you know, right after tea or something, which is, you know, understood to be around 2. And then on the $100 bill, I believe it is, the U.S. $100 bill, there's a picture of the, you know, some building, which I should probably look that up beforehand, but basically it says...
I'll just rip a bill out of my purse. I know. Don't worry.
Exactly. It basically says 2:20 on the clock on the Constitution Hall building, which is kind of a little hint, you know?
So he's purporting the Scorpio rising for the American...
Right. And the eagle is the symbol of the U.S.,
okay.
Which is
so this would be the U.S. chart, and this we can test it against a million things.
A million things, which he does in this book, which is fascinating. Mm. And yeah.
And you like this, his...
Yeah.
Because...
Well, I really am into political astrology.
Yes, indeed. Yeah. Yes.
And of course, there is the whole... I have Scorpio rising as well. So. But I don't think that biases me at all. I think it's more about... You know,
in the spirit of transparency,
yes.
Oh, it's got Scorpio rising, so it's the chart that she's supporting.
Exactly.
It's interesting that, you know, that, and I must be honest, that was a book, that would be a book I would not pick off the shelf.
Yeah.
Because it interests you, right? Yeah. So that's great, you know.
Totally. Yeah. So I'll link to it and his website as well. He has a lot of great articles.
Okay.
He has articles about all the presidents and about how many of them have... you know, different angles and also different sun moons that really correspond a lot with Scorpio rising chart.
Okay.
For example, statistically, if you take all the presidents, all 43,
yes.
However many there have been, there are more of them that have the sun in Leo and Scorpio than any other sign, apparently. And this is explained, you know, not at all by the other two ascendant charts, by Gemini rising or Sagittarius rising. It's, you know, like, how does that happen? But yet, if you take, you know, Scorpio rising with the Leo on the midheaven, then all of a sudden having a ton of Leos and a ton of Scorpios makes perfect sense. And, yeah.
Interesting. Very interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So what we're saying as well is that countries have charts.
Countries have charts,
yes.
Definitely. Yeah. And some of them, newer ones, like Israel and Iran.
Yes.
Iran. They both have an exact time, you know, in modern history,
yes.
where you can point to and say, okay, at that moment when, you know, Khomeini stepped off the airplane in 1979, mm-hmm. that moment is the birth of the modern, you know, nation of Iran. And Israel, that there was a vote in 1948 to make it, you know, its own country. And, you know, the minute that
yeah.
last vote
all the modern,
came down.
All the last 100 years, we've got the,
right.
haven't we?
Yeah. And so for the, you know, any other, obviously there's a little more gray area. There's not, you know, like a firm ascendant for, like, well, the Cromwell chart for the UK, I suppose. It's the 1066 chart, they call it. I don't know what time they went with, you know. I mean, who knows, in 1066, like...
I do not, I haven't got that chart in my fingertips,
yeah.
but it is in my bookcase. Yes.
Yeah, exactly, mine too. I'm sure that they did, you know, pick a really good time, but, you know, yeah, like, for most countries, it's not very well documented, so, yeah. It's an interesting debate.
It is.
Yeah.
And what's interesting, when you go back to, let me tell you, when you go back to charts way back then,
yeah.
they tend to leave out the, even though modern astrologers would tend to leave out the outer planets because they weren't known to those people.
Exactly.
Now, that's a question, whether should you or shouldn't you?
Right.
Put them in, take them out. But just by the way, I'm going
yeah,
there.
Yeah, it's true, yeah.
We need to look into that. I'll have to dig that chart out as well.
Yeah, definitely.
And just link it up there somehow.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, great. So, interesting book.
I totally recommend it. It's Political Astrology by Michael O'Reilly.
Great.
Yeah. And what do you have?
I have Chinese Astrology by Suzanne Wu.
Hmm.
And this is Chinese astrology is slightly different. The normal astrology that Arwen and I discuss is called Western astrology,
yeah.
and it's Aries, Taurus, Gemini. But Chinese astrology is the tiger, the
ox,
the monkey,
yeah.
and so on. And in Chinese astrology, there is a different sign for a year, although there are 12 signs.
Right.
And I believe it starts at the rat and ends at the pig, but in between I'm not fully up with it. I read it as a matter of interest, but it's not really something I'm particularly strong in.
Yeah.
Chinese astrology, I don't think you are either, are you?
Not at all.
No.
No.
And...
So this book is a good introduction to it for someone
who's not... It is. It's a good introduction. It's quite complicated. Mm. It's just the way they structure. They've got the pillar for the day, and there's four different animals that you can actually pick up depending on what time and day and year you were born.
Oh, like a rising animal.
You will have more than one animal. So even if you think you're a tiger, you may have different...
I wish I thought.
I know. There are four different... So anyway, she goes into this, and it is an introduction to Chinese astrology. It does come with a CD at the back, which I'm sure is great. If you've got a CD reader, you can read into that and find out exactly what your times and dates are. But it's an excellent introduction. It's probably the only book I'm ever going to buy on Chinese astrology because my interest doesn't go deep enough. But I did want it to look into it because particularly since I moved out west, my client base has shifted. Unbelievably.
Have you actually managed to use any of the
No, but because my clients are from a different ethnic group, yeah. They are able to discuss Chinese astrology, and I need to really sound like I know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, oh, that's excellent.
So I've had quite a few Chinese ladies come for readings. Nice. And funnily enough, a lady whom I taught from Hong Kong is actually coming to Vancouver next month, and we're meeting for the first time face-to-face.
Oh, wow, that's awesome.
So that will be interesting. So, yeah.
Cool.
So it's more of a, it's not something I'm going to go into, but it's interesting.
Yeah, definitely.
And I think we can link to her site.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
she's got a website. So that's Chinese Astrology by Susanne Wu.
Nice. I had a Gemini friend, actually, strangely enough, who had a book that was like split down the middle and you can flip half the page and then come, the top half, then second, bottom half. And it was half, the top half, I guess, was Western astrology and the bottom half was Chinese astrology or the other way around.
Yes.
And you can put your, whichever... you are, and read them both together, kind of thing.
Okay.
And then it had compatibility and all that, too. That's apparently great. Mine isn't that compatible in Chinese astrology with my guy, but that's okay. We're super compatible in Western astrology.
What I find is interesting, I find is interesting is because there are 12 animals in Chinese astrology, each year it changes. That mimics the pattern of Jupiter.
I was going to say, yeah.
Because Jupiter takes 12 years to go around. It spends one whole year. So now that Jupiter's in Cancer, we're in the year of the horse.
Right.
And previous to that, when we were in the year of the snake, Jupiter was in Gemini. And that's always the case.
Yeah.
So Jupiter stays with.
Huh.
So in a way, if you understand what Jupiter in Cancer means, you can get some determination about what the horse is about.
That's interesting. I wonder if there's any kind of historical... astronomical correspondence there.
Now the Chinese year starts at different times. It's linked hooked to the lunar,
new
lunar month after the solstice, and it's a little complicated.
So anyway, over the course of like hundreds of years, it would sort of disengage from Jupiter a bit.
No, not really, because Jupiter's still 12 years. Maybe it slips a bit, but anyway.
Yeah, we'll have to.
So, but at the moment, your lifetime and my lifetime, when Jupiter's in Cancer, we're in the year of the horse.
Nice.
So,
interesting.
I don't know if there's some there's got to be some correlation there, but it's just kind of interesting to see that coming round.
Totally. Did you know the spot on Jupiter is shrinking?
Is that right?
Yeah, the big red one.
Yeah.
It's like vanishing.
Gosh.
I know.
Something else I wanted to say about the Chinese astrology is that it's not just for China, it's totally Asian.
Yeah.
It's Oriental, it's Eastern. All those countries around there, Laos and Cambodia and all of those countries, Korea, all use Chinese astrology. It's just called Chinese as a...
Right, we call it that.
Yes, but really one would say Eastern astrology as opposed to Western. I just wanted to say that as
well. That might get people confused with the Vedic astrology then. Maybe that's why we continue to call it Chinese.
Perhaps.
Yeah, because if we call it Eastern, then it would be like, I don't know.
Perhaps.
East Coast, West Coast, rivalry thing happening. I don't know. We don't want to confuse people.
Because the Vedic is the Indian, for those who
are interested. Yes, right, exactly.
That's the different one, the Hindu astrology particularly. So, they use the sidereal zodiac, but that's something else. But anyway.
Yeah.
So there's not just our astrology.
No, there's a few.
Do you use Chinese? You don't, you say no. No. I doesn't quite... quite got the time, I think, too.
Yeah, it's a whole other thing. And also, I'm an ox, so.
Oh.
It's sort of a barrier to entry for me, really,
It's kind of one of those animals that, like.
Yeah, exactly. A water ox. No,
a water ox.
It's water.
That even looks like what you
said. Oh, I know what that looks like. It looks like one of those crazy wildebeest things. in Africa, when you, you know, with the big giant horns and the,
oh,
yes, they're always in some watering hole.
A buffalo, you mean?
Eaten in one gulp by an alligator
or
crocodile, whichever it is they have out there. Yeah,
I see.
Yep.
Well, then it's, you know, if they had, I think, to be honest, from the Western's point of view, if they had better animals, we'd probably use it more.
Probably. If it was like an ocelot.
Or
you know,
a kitten. I'd like to
be a kitten.
I'd like to be a kitten.
Then the year of the kitten.
Or a budgie, you know.
A budgie.
Or, I know, a rabbit. Well, they do have rabbits, but I mean, when they do, it's just, you know. So anyway, if we were going to reinvent 12 new animals and create our very own astrology, clearly we've hit a nerve with Arwen that she quite thinks that's a good idea.
Oh my God.
I cannot imagine what animal she's going to come up with next.
Don't say budgie again.
Why not? Am I missing something?
I'm going to be okay. Oh my Lord.
Alrighty. Okay. So there's a thought. So we'll discuss that next time about creating a new astrology
indeed
for us.
Indeed we will. Yes. Oh my goodness.
Well, you never know what's going to happen to you.
I know. I never do. Oh my gosh.
Okay.
Oh Lord. Okay. I have composed myself a little bit. Well, aside from the fact that I can no longer breathe, that is about it for our Gemini episode.
That's great.
Yes, definitely. Thank you for joining us. Next time we'll have our second guest, Nina Griffin, the astrologer Nina Griffin. She,
fantastic.
Yes, absolutely. That's next time. So join us on May 31st for that.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. Axis Astrology is produced and recorded by Roger Aaron Toes. I am Arwen O'Neill.
And I'm Alison Pratt.
Thank you for joining us.
We'll see you next time.
See you next time.